Hi, I'm Beck Young. I'm a surgical assistant here in Melbourne, and I'm chatting to the lovely.
I'm Beck Lettingham, coming to you from Broome, Western Australia. So I am coming to you from Yaru land and would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which I am sitting.
And I would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation.
Fantastic. So, sadly, we're not where we were hoping to be at this time, and lots of people are stuck at home again in lockdowns.
I know. And yes, here in Melbourne, we are. It's been leaked that there's probably going to be lockdown number 6 announced later on today. So that's a bit disappointing, feeling a bit flat. But yes, lots of other people around the country in a similar position. So that's where we are, isn't it?
It's a whole new dimension to life that we've never experienced before. So with this trip I just did, I drove from Broome to Alice Springs and met friends who had come from Melbourne. And I was thinking that it was a bit like a video game where I had flat tyres and all these other challenges, but also we had, you know, unknown borders.
Yeah, right.
Whether or not you're going to get locked out or...
Is it orange? Is it red? Will we have to...
It's like a whole nother element, and I can just see myself in a little video car going. I spent 4 hours arguing the toss to come back the via the Tanami, which is by far and away the quickest way to come home. Because even when they opened the border, they were only letting people cross the large WA border in two places by road.
Wow.
And they were going, is there just a reason you can't go to Kununurra? And I was going, yes, the reason is I'm in Alice Springs. The reason is geography. Right. So anyway, they let me, but I did get stopped by the police and had to like jump through.
Talk your way around. Mm. Yes. Yeah. So. My daughter said to me the other night, she's 7. She said, Mum, when you were little, how long did people wear masks for? And I said, no, we didn't wear masks. And she said, no, but how long did you wear masks for? And I said, no, darling, first time I had to wear a mask at the supermarket, I was 43. You're going through something really different. This is not normal. She thought that we must all, you know, have had a pandemic in our childhoods.
although the letters from Anais and into Henry Miller, have you seen those from the flu pandemic?
No.
He's a non-believer. And he's a bit of a free spirit, and she's like, he refuses to wash his hands, you know. So I guess there is, there has been a history, but most people who lived through it wouldn't be alive anymore.
Totally, yeah. Totally, I get that. Anyway, so that means that we've had lots of time for watching and listening. So Beck, why don't we get started? Tell me, please, what have you been watching lately?
Well, one thing that this is a little bit different to what we normally review, but I wondered if you'd watched Misrepresented on ABC with Annabelle Crabb.
I did watch this. Yes.
Yeah.
It's terrific.
I think it's must watch for medical mums, I would say. Pretty easy to consume, 3-4 episodes of 30 minutes. And
yeah,
cuts across the political spectrum, so it's not particularly, doesn't matter what your political beliefs are. You've got people from all sides of politics there, and they're women who are the first of something, generally, is who she interviewed. So the first prime minister, the first Asian woman in politics, first Aboriginal woman in politics. So I found it fascinating. Did you like it?
I found it really interesting. So I'm not politically minded. I'm fully informed when it comes to politics. So I put it off for a little bit, but then when I came to it, I was quite delighted to see that it was half-hour episodes. So for me, that made it quite accessible. And, I found it really interesting. I found it just so amazing, some of the blocks that women have come up against and the perseverance that some of, you know, women had historically, and how they just kept going and going and going until they got into parliament and got a seat at the table. I was really impressed with that. And I also found it really interesting, especially in episode 2, where they talk about how, you know, like even women today feel like they don't get heard, they don't get listened to. That really resonated with me.
Yeah.
That is how I feel. I feel that people don't listen, people don't hear what I say. So For a federal politician to say that, I thought it was astounding.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in several situations in my professional life where I have had to go and find a male ally to put forward my point of view because that's the only way of getting it on the table, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the reason she did it is it's 100 years since the first female parliamentarian was voted into parliament, and that was Edith Cowan in WA.
Yep.
And I found it really interesting that the early women into the lower house in the federal government had to campaign as though they were housewives. So,
yeah,
you know, one of them was had a cookbook of what to do with mints, and she got her friend to write it because she wasn't doing anything with mints. But she had to be seen as a good housewife. And then Joan,
to get the vote.
Yeah, Joan Child, who was the first speaker, they'd come to her house and take photos of her in the kitchen.
Hilarious. And the photo of Bronwyn Bishop with the vacuum or the, you know, yeah, the carpet. I thought that is hilarious. And yeah, they all pointed out it was quite ridiculous because the men were never photographed, you know, mowing the lawn or, you know, fixing the car or, you know, but the women were, yeah, the way they got votes was to look successful in their home life. And how slammed Julia Gillard was when she was posed beside an empty fruit bowl.
Which wasn't even a fruit bowl. It was just an ornamental bowl. And now it has fruit in it because she feels so pressured to put fruit in the bowl that everyone, the whole nation called the fruit bowl. I also was reminded about, I don't think this was the intention of the series, but I think it's reasonably obvious to most people who've ever heard any of my opinions that I'm a bit left-leaning. But I really appreciate Amanda Vanstone. She's one of my favourite politicians of all time.
Yes, so, she was. Yeah. I appreciated. Yeah.
And she used to do a show on ABC Radio called Counterpoint, where she would get the opposing views of an issue. And she's just, we just need more of that. She's just straight shooting. I really enjoyed hearing her speak again. I think the things like having to campaign hard to get a toilet that the women could go to, how is that even a thing once they realise? So it's accompanied by a podcast that an Annabelle Crabb does with Steph Tisdale.
I haven't tuned into the podcast. Have you listened at all, Beck?
I've listened to one episode and I'm going to listen to the rest, but they talk a little bit more about this, and including I've been to a few question times because I used to go in lobby groups for rural health to Canberra regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And in the house, in the, you know, where they do that, it's this big kind of have you been there to the house?
Canberra.
Where they do question time and where they sit opposite each other. And
the grade 6 camp I went, yes. Yep. Yep.
So they were saying how it's really built for male voices, and in order to get louder that female voices have to go up in pitch, and then you know that's when people can
call you real.
Yeah, exactly. And they played a bit of audio from Carmen Lawrence, who has quite a deep voice. She was a WA premier that went into federal politics, a really popular WA Labor premier who was going to be the federal Labor's answer, and she was on Misrepresented. And she said even to her ears, a woman trying to speak loud enough to be heard across the chamber was a bit shrill, you know. And they did talk about it on the TV show, that the temperature is set for people in three-piece suits, so women are freezing cold. And I think it's about parliament, but it's about much more than parliament. That's why I think.
Well, totally, because even where Julia Gillard was saying, you know, the way they speak to each other and just that wall of sound that comes at you as a female, you know, she said it's overwhelming and intimidating, and I was thinking, oh, I would be petrified.
Yeah.
That sounds so unpleasant to me. I would not cope with that style of communication. It also made me think too of the, you know, feedback I received as a junior doctor about my speaking voice and about terminal inflections and how I needed to reduce my use of terminal inflections in my speaking voice, which I'm sure, you know, speak more like male, basically.
So I think, I mean, we're going to do some, I've got some lighthearted stuff to talk about given what's going on in the world, but I just couldn't go past talking about that. I think my dog's got something to say about it too out there. Sorry. If it seems like there might be someone here, I'll pause, but we'll see if he settles down.
I agree. everybody, well, you sound like you're politically informed, and that's excellent. So you enjoyed it. Well, as somebody who's not, you know, politically, particularly active, I also enjoyed it.
Yeah, so. I don't think you have to be interested in politics to find this interesting, because it's about humanity and the way we do business, really, isn't
and
it?
And about females in the workplace.
And easy to watch. I've started watching it the second time with my kids. So 11 and 13, my kids are, and they're really interested in it too. So it's ABC, so family friendly viewing.
Terrific.
I think it's a must watch.
Excellent. All right. And what about leisure viewing, Beck? What's been on the list for light-hearted and escape?
So I wanted to go back into the archives a little bit, because I realised that we were doing mostly new things. But one of the more new ones that we just didn't fell off the list once, which I think is very heartwarming, particularly for people of a certain age, and that is the new Punky Brewster that's hit Stan.
Oh, yes, okay. So,
Well, I was a Punky Brewster kid.
Yeah,
particularly hard done by, because I had a black and white TV, and Punky Brewster was all about colour. So the original Punky Brewster came out in 1984, and I was struggling to figure out if it's a sitcom, because I'd call it more of a dramedy, really, but it's filmed in front of a live audience. So it's got.
You mean hold on.
Yeah, both of them.
Both filmed in front of a live studio audience.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so in 1984, this young girl, Punky Brewster, Penelope Brewster, who
Lil Moon Fry, yes,
she is abandoned by her mum in the shops and starts living in an empty apartment building, and then eventually gets fostered by Henry. And it had four seasons, and she had a lot of kind of funky style and wore mismatching shoes, and I really, really identified with that as a young child. And now she's back, and it's the same actors. I think Henry has passed on, because he was quite old back in the 80s.
Yeah.
But her best friend Sherry is back. She's back as a 40-something single mother of three, and Sherry works in the child protection system. And so Punky meets a young girl who reminds her of herself at that age. And that's where we find her. She's just recently separated from her husband, you know, working out, raising children. And she's still Punky, you know. And so I watch this with my kids, who can't wait to find and watch the original. It is definitely a drama. Like, there was times when I watched it first by myself and then again with the kids, that it made me absolutely weep. And there's some criticisms of it.
Getting the people who watched, it's not like a reboot. It's not like, you know.
No, it's just a where is she now?
It's the follow on. Okay.
Absolutely.
So
yeah,
probably targeting the original audience. But then
my kids loved it. So the criticisms that I've heard of it is that it's overacted. But if you consider the vehicle, it's filmed in front of a studio audience. So there has to be that kind of gap to let the audience respond. So I don't think it's overacted. And I think that it's just that's the genre. And I think the cleverness and the subtleties when you're acting in that bigger, larger than life type of way is in the writing and in the way. So they use a little bit of original footage from Punky, and they've got some of the original set. And, you know, the original characters now, you know, 30-something, what are we?
Yeah, right.
You know, 38 years later, 37 years later. I just think it's lovely. And it's also matured. So her best friend is a woman of colour. And so those issues are now with a modern lens, you know.
Yes.
So it's nice to see that. And issues around kids in the system as well have matured.
Yeah.
And there's less of a... I think that we look at those kind of things very differently to what we did in the 80s, and this is following that story. It's just such a really beautiful way of doing it. Even so, I don't really mind the larger-than-life American approach to things. I think I can accept it, but I think that is a barrier for some people who like understatement. But I just don't think a sitcom will ever be understated. It just doesn't work like that. So that's probably others' criticisms of it. But I think... family viewing again, beautiful. The kids I didn't know would have such a positive response, but they absolutely loved it.
Terrific. All right. So how many stars out of five?
Look, as a Punky Brewster Tragic from my childhood, I would be, you know, 4.75, I think.
Oh, okay. Right, okay. All right. I love Punky Brewster too, so I'll have to check it out. Okay. Cool. Terrific.
And I think as well, as the same age as Punky, it's nice to think of yourself as a child. I think it takes you back into your own childhood. You know, it's like a portal to your own childhood to watch the same character now as a grown up and see how, you know, she's clearly fictional, but she seeing how she deals. I'm a divorced single mother, you know, and so there's a lot of self-reflection. I think I've never seen anything done like this where they've picked up 30 years later, but it's a really interesting thing to experience as someone who watched the original.
Cool. Okay.
What about you? What have you been watching?
Well, I was actually wanted to talk about, it's a new series, so it's The White Lotus on Binge. So you don't have Binge, do you, Beck?
No, I don't.
Okay, I feel like I'm always trying to convert you to Binge, but
you nearly have.
Anyway, so I came to this series because it stars Connie Britton, and I do love Connie Britton. I don't know if you know Connie Britton from Friday Night Lights or from Nashville, but she's a fabulous actress. Anyway, so The White Lotus is an HBO series by Mike White. So there's four episodes out and there's still two to be released. So it's the story of a luxury Hawaiian resort called The White Lotus, and it centres around a group of guests who are all seemingly unrelated except for the fact that they're staying at this resort. So the opening scene is at the end of the week, and we see a man sitting in the airport waiting for his plane, and the couple beside him strike up a conversation, you know, where have you been staying? And he says, oh, I was staying at the White Lotus. And they said, oh, didn't somebody die there this week? And then we see footage of human remains being loaded onto a plane. So right away we know there's been a death, and that sort of sets that we watch the series knowing that. So then it flips back to a week before, and we see a group of guests arriving to the island, and we see staff waiting for their arrival. So amongst the staff, there's manager Armand, who is played by Australian Murray Bartlett. He's delightful. Armand is, nothing is too much trouble for his guests. He's always got a broad smile. Everything's done, you know, to the nth degree. Everything is his pleasure. But behind the scenes, he's working his staff really hard. And he strikes up a rivalry with one of the guests, Shane. So all week we watch him have veiled barbs and blows with Shane. Shane is a wealthy white trust fund baby who's honeymooning with his new wife, Rachel. Rachel is a mediocre journalist and adjusting to her new role as wife. We meet the Mosbachers, and this is Connie Britton. Connie Britton plays Nicole Mosbacher, who is CEO of a tech company, and she's holidaying with her husband, Mark, who's having an existential crisis because his scrotum is swollen. They've got their teenage son who wants to spend the whole vacation on his phone, and their teenage daughter, Olivia. And Olivia's got her friend, Paula, and they're sophomores in college. And they have contempt for most of the other people on the island and have arrived with a bag full of party drugs. And there's one other character that I need to mention too, is Jennifer Coolidge's character, Tonya, who is a single traveller. She's arrived with her mother's ashes, and her plan is to spread the ashes out in the ocean. So a hodgepodge of characters, and we watch them over the week as they interact, and we see little frays, I guess, at the edges of these relationships. It's a commentary. I've heard it's a commentary on wealth and privilege. I thought it was sort of an Agatha Christie-esque Murder on the Orient Express type thing. So the viewer knows what's going to happen, and we just have to work out who did it, where did they do it, why did they do it.
It also sounds a little bit like Big Little Lies. where you, you start knowing the ending, but you don't know the ending.
Yeah, or why they got there, which relationship deteriorates, who finally decides, well, I don't know. Anyway, so I would give this a 4 out of 5.
Excellent. So I wanted to take a walk down memory lane a little bit for me, just in case people needed a bit of uplifting. And I'm going to talk about a Stan series. So Punky Brewster was on Stan. I think I forgot to mention that. And it's Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. So there'll be some people who've already watched it because it's already kind of well known. But I'm pretty sure it's finished after 3 series. It seems as though the last episode was the last
episode. I heard it got cancelled.
So, which is amazing because it's I think the story had to finish though, and I'm interested to see what they do next. But this is a musical series, which we, I guess, Glee was the forerunner of, and then I don't know if anyone's watched Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, but that was a bit more of a quirky musical series, which I have particularly enjoyed.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
And I think Zoe's is kind of the grown-up version of Glee. I wish I had the skills to work on a show like this, and that's what I find myself thinking when I watch it, because it looks like a lot of fun. Zoe gets a job in a tech company, and it's either Google or Apple. You know, I think it's called SparkPoint. And I often think, is it meant to be Apple? Is it meant to be Google? But it's one of the, you know, it's clearly one of the big tech companies. Really funky office, very Silicon Valley. And at the very start, there's a sad kind of story going along in the first series that her dad has motor neurone disease, and she's getting some headaches. So she goes along to have an MRI because it's America and that's what you do for a headache in America. So, and while she's in the MRI machine, there's an earthquake. And when she comes out of the MRI, she's walking down the street and everyone breaks into song. And she realizes that she can now hear the innermost thoughts of people around her, and they sing her these heart songs. And she has to respond to them, otherwise she is haunted by them. Basically, that's the premise.
You can't tell them. Yeah.
Yep. So she is an actor called my writing is terrible. I do all these notes, but they're of no use. Jane is her name. I think maybe Gray.
Okay.
And one of the most beautiful characters is Alex Newell, who was in Glee as a boy on the opposing team who had a really kind of feminine energy, and the Glee team encourage him to dress up and put heels on and everything, and he becomes this formidable opponent because he's amazing. And so he's kind of gender fluid. No one ever talks about how he identifies, but his name's Mo, and mostly dresses in beautiful dresses and is very effeminate, but people still say him and he. So yeah, I think one of the best things is that it's not defined, and it's not the main storyline. It's just this beautiful singer who lives next door, who wears beautiful dresses and helps Zoe through her crisis with the heart songs. And she's in a love triangle as well between Max, who she got the job with, or got at similar times they got employed, and Simon, who's a new employee at SparkPoint. So that kind of carries on through the series, and we meet all these characters through their heart songs. And there's a lot of very beautiful dancing, contemporary dance and musical Broadway type singing, and new storylines, including some very hard hitting stuff, like her brother has a baby and her sister-in-law goes through some very significant postnatal depression. So I think they deal with Simon's a man of colour who feels that the company is not listening to him and not treating him well because of his colour. So he challenges the company and brings about change in the company. So there's some pretty hard-hitting topics, but done in this most light-hearted, enjoyable way. You've watched a little bit, haven't you?
I did. So I watched some of the first series. I didn't get all the way through it, and I like a bit of musical performance. I did love The Neighbour. I couldn't remember the character's name, but I remember that I loved The Neighbour. And I loved how Zoe could communicate with her dad in now that she has this special talent because, in you know, as part of his disease, he'd lost the ability to speak. And so that really got me in the heart, that one.
Yeah.
That little bit of the storyline, but I haven't watched it since there. Yeah.
And I think the people finding the music I really appreciate too, because they find some very obscure songs. So they've found some obscure songs that I knew, like I Think I Love You, So What Am I So Afraid Of? And I hadn't heard that song for donkeys. And but yes, they've also found some obscure songs that now I know because they've introduced me to them. So there's one called Overwhelmed, and it's about anxiety, and it's a fabulous song. And it's you know, it's a staccato song, and it, and in Zoe's it comes up in the waiting room, and all the other patients start singing to her and dancing around her in this very staccato way about their anxiety, and it's great to have songs like that. So I think I really appreciate just the musicality of it as well. So you don't, there's a lot there. There's something for everyone, I think. There's some good storylines, you know, some typical kind of love triangle. There's a lot of gender identity stuff. You know, I think it's worth a watch. And it's very, even though there's those really emotionally laden themes, the style of people just breaking into song and dance kind of keeps it light.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Nice. Very good.
What's next?
Well, the next one the next one on my list is a rom-com series on Netflix called Feel Good. So this is semi-autobiographical and is written and stars Canadian comedian Mae Martin. That was quite the sentence, wasn't it? So the series is centred around the relationship between Mae and George, and it captures the early days of a romance. So there's actually two seasons, and I'm only early in season two, but so I'm particularly talking about season one. So Mae is a 27-year-old. She's a recovering cocaine addict, and there's 10 years of her life that she doesn't really remember. She was kicked out of home at age 16, and she still has a slightly prickly relationship with her parents. Her mother's played by Lisa Kudrow, who's great. She is definitely no Phoebe Buffay or in this series. She plays a very sharp, acid-tongued woman who is tired, sick and tired of her daughter's bullshit. So, yeah, she's really good. Anyway, Mae is now living in London and she's dating George. George is played by Charlotte Ritchie, who I know from Fresh Meat. And when I read a little bit about Charlotte, she's also been in Call the Midwife and she's got quite the resume. Anyway, George is a highly strung secondary school teacher. She's got posh British friends. Her best friend's name is Binky. And her friends all think that George has a boyfriend and is a straight, you know, proper English rose. George is struggling to come out to her friends and struggling to admit to the world that she's in love with Mae. And Mae has an addictive personality, so she also has anxiety. So the series touches on some mental health issues, touches on addiction issues, and Mae seems at times to have swapped her addiction to cocaine to her addiction for George. So she can be quite, overbearing. Mae is attending sobriety meetings and there's some lovely scenes between Mae and her, the other people in the group, and also with Mae and the group leader, and also between Mae and her sponsor. And Mae, in the series, in real life, she's a stand-up, but in the series she's also a stand-up. And so there's some, you know, some interesting storylines at the club. And there's also a quirky housemate who is played by comedian Phil Burgers. I don't know him, but in some of my reading around the series, he has a bit of a cult following as well. And so he plays George's housemate, and he's a bit of a, there's some lovely things there. So I enjoyed this series because it's quirky. again, it's giving me some insight into the young people in the world at the moment.
Keeping up with the young folk.
I am. Every time I'm like, oh, these the new generations, they give me hope, you know, they're emotionally intelligent people. And you know, lovely 25-minute episodes, totally bingeable, streaming now on Netflix. Check it out. I'll give it 4 out of 5 stars.
Excellent. Now, I was thinking I might talk about the two books that I've managed to read.
You've been reading? Oh, what have you been reading?
Well, I've been reading by listening, so I don't know if you get as much credit for that, but 90 hours of driving gives you a lot of listening time. So
totally.
I finished Phosphorescent.
I feel like listening to a book is different to reading a book, especially because the narrator can
affect your journey.
Yes.
I finished Phosphorescence, which I wasn't going to talk about, but that's a good book by Julia Baird.
Yes, that's my list.
Probably if you're feeling existentially crisis-y, kind of, it's not a bad one to listen to. It's got some nice threads to. Have you read it?
No, it's coming up later in the year for book clubs. So yeah. Yes.
But then I listened to A Room of Leaves, which I must have had a recommendation because I signed up to Audible, don't really know how to unsign up. So I've got all these books on my shelf.
You have to log on your computer. Yeah.
And so somebody must have recommended it at some point, or I listened to an author interview with her. She sounds pretty cool. I've never read any of her books and I know she's got quite a following. Anyway, it's the alternative history to Elizabeth MacArthur, who was the wife of John MacArthur. So she's a real person. John MacArthur's a real person. He was the father of sheep farming and merino wool in Australia. But actually, it seems like probably that's not quite true, and probably Elizabeth MacArthur was the mother of sheep farming in Australia. So she's written a lot of letters, and Kate Grenville edits this alternative history that was behind the letters is how she puts it. So it's a historical. I don't know how to describe it, but it's an alternative story of Elizabeth MacArthur, and from the first settlement in New South Wales. It's really good.
Right.
I'm not usually into historical stories, but I really enjoyed this look at the alternative facts.
Version. Okay. All right. That sounds interesting. I'll have to check it out.
And some people will have read her other books, which I'm now going to do. And so, you know, she's pretty solid historical fiction writer in Australia.
You mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
And, yep, have you ever read her?
I think so, but I can't remember what her other books are.
The Secret River. I think The Secret River is her most famous one. It's about a convict who gets an acreage and starts farming, and it's a conflict between the First Nations people basically, and that kind of points of view on that. So yep. I've got that lined up on my excessively large Audible bookshelf. So the next book that I read was a true delight, and I really recommend anyone read it. It's called Honeybee. It's by Craig Silvey, who wrote Jasper Jones. He's a WA writer, so for the WA people like me, it's really fun to listen to a book set in WA, because that's not the norm for Australian writers. And the opening scene is Sam, a 14-year-old, is going to take his life and is standing on the overpass over the freeway when he spots Vic, who is having his last smoke before he jumps. And they strike up a friendship on the bridge. And we learn about Sam and Vic and their kind of cast of characters around them and the things that they're fighting, and they're the most unlikely pairing, Sam and Vic. So Sam's in a bit of a rugged situation, has grown up with a single mum who was an alcoholic, and later in his childhood gets together with a fella who has his challenges, and Sam's struggling a little bit with his own identity, and Vic is recently widowed, or not that recently, but Vic is a widow who really misses his wife and stayed alive because of her dog, who's recently died. And he had 11 years between novels, Craig Silvey, and I think that he is really widely consulted with particularly the LGBTQ community, because Sam's got some gender issues. And as a straight man. Craig Silvey's done a beautiful job of building this character, and I think it's been well received. So there's lots of interesting things to think about after you realise that he's not from that community but represents it in this story so beautifully. But I highly recommend it. I just think it's a delightful tale.
Okay. All right. I have actually seen it recommended before and you've reminded me. So I will get that one. Excellent. Well, I had a couple of other quick recommendations. Dr. Death on Stan. There's been a lot of chat in, I work in theatre, so there's been a lot of chat of Dr. Death. It's the true story of a hack surgeon in Texas, and it's horrifying in the way that he continued to maim and disable and kill people, and it's recent history. So this all sort of happened in 2011, 2012, 2014. It stars Joshua Jackson, Pacey from
the
Dawson's Creek. I was like, which one? And it also stars Christian Slater, who's actually really great in this. Sometimes he's a bit, and Alec Baldwin. I don't usually like Alec Baldwin, and he's also really good in this. So
that's quite the cast.
It has quite the cast, yeah. And it also stars Meryl Streep's daughter, who I'm sure has her own name. and he's really good. So check it out. That's on Stan. And This Way Up, Series 2. I spoke about Series 1 in one of our earlier podcasts. And so these are the delightful Irish sisters, Anya and Shona, and they're back for Series 2. And this series focuses more on Shona and in the lead up to her marriage to Vish. So they're quirky and hilarious. So also on Stan. You got any quick recommendations for us, Beck?
No, but I do have a shout out. So, again, as a relatively free today West Australian, but things might change tomorrow because we've got this kind of, you know, circulating weekly positive case, whatever that means, you know, totally wishing to make anything better that I can for those in lockdown, but we've decided that Medical Mum Sing in Solidarity should come back for a Project 3. We've got the music arranging and we've outsourced to this wonderful musician who works for the Australian Navy as their musical person. So we will be making the announcement and dropping all the rehearsal videos in the next couple of days. So if you want to have a sing along with some medical mums, come and find us, Medical Mums Sing in Solidarity, and have a sing or a play on an instrument, and we will get the magic of editing to put it so we're all in one place singing together.
And I have to say, this was the project, the first Medical Mum Singing in Solidarity was the project that got me through the long lockdown in Melbourne last year. So that's very exciting news that there's another one going ahead. Yep. As we stare down the barrel of our sixth lockdown here in Melbourne. Anyway, terrific. Oh, that's great.
And if anyone hasn't been watching Jimmy Rees with his Meanwhile in Australia, it is a way of laughing at our situation, because if you don't laugh, you cry, and all of those cliched sayings. The last one was a little bit close to home. He was if anyone hasn't seen it, it would be amazing, but he acts as the premier of each state. And I really appreciate that he looks in the right direction. So if he's in New South Wales, he looks down to Victoria and up to Queensland. And he was going, who's next? Who's next? And he was looking around and they're like, it's going to be you. I bet you, Victoria. And then it was all very close to home, but he said, oh, it's going to be WA. They've got the COVID boats. And, you know, this is the reality of our life at the moment, isn't it? Is that one day you know, you're in relative freedom, and the next day it all changes.
You're locked down.
So stay safe, everyone. I hope everyone has been able to access vaccination.
Distract yourself with some watching and some reading and some listening and singing.
And, yeah, there's heaps of good stuff to watch on TV. And we've had the flood of post-vaccination US TV shows, which also gives me this kind of weird long bow of hope that they're back in the production studios, so there's life at the end of this tunnel.
The White Lotus was filmed at the end of 2020 in Hawaii. I was like, wow, that's awesome. There's all these reality TV shows that are being released now that have been filmed. So, yes, there is hope.
Yeah.
To opening Yeah. All right, well, I can hear my crew home from school, so.
All right, well, lovely to see you back. Depending on our availability and our lockdown status, we'll get together soon and talk about some more.
Hopefully we can soon. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Cheers, see ya.